Though he could look across the full width of the cylindrical sea and knew the general direction from which Resolution was coming, Jimmy did not spot the tiny craft until it had already passed New York. It seemed incredible that it could carry six men and whatever equipment they had brought to rescue him. When it was only a kilometer away, he recognized Commander Norton and started waving. A little later, the skipper spotted him and waved back.
"Glad to see you're in good shape, Jimmy," he radioed. "I promised we wouldn't leave you behind. Now do you believe me?"
Not quite, Jimmy thought. Until this moment, he had still wondered if this was all a kindly plot to keep up his morale. But the commander would not have crossed the sea just to say goodbye. He must have worked out something.
"I'll believe you, Skipper," he said, "when I'm down there on the deck. Now will you tell me how I'm going to make it?"
Resolution was now slowing down, 100 meters from the base of the cliff. As far as Jimmy could tell, she carried no unusual equipment, though he was not sure what he had expected to see.
"Sorry about that, Jimmy, but we didn't want you to have too many things to worry about."
Now that sounded ominous. What the devil did he mean? Resolution came to a halt, 50 meters out and 500 below. Jimmy had almost a bird's-eye view of the commander as he spoke into his microphone.
"This is it, Jimmy. You'll be perfectly safe, but it will require nerve. We know you've got plenty of that. You're going to jump."
500 meters?
"Yes, but at only half a G."
"So? Have you ever fallen 250 on Earth?"
"Shut up, or I'll cancel your next leave. You should have worked this out for yourself. It's just a question of terminal velocity. In this atmosphere, you can't reach more than 90 kilometers an hour, whether you fall 200 or 2,000 meters. 90's a little high for comfort, but we can trim it some more. This is what you'll have to do, so listen carefully."
"I will," said Jimmy. "It had better be good."
He did not interrupt the commander again, and made no comment when Norton had finished. Yes, it made sense, and was so absurdly simple that it would take a genius to think of it. And perhaps someone who did not expect to do it himself. Jimmy had never tried high diving or made a delayed parachute drop, which would have given him some psychological preparation for this feat. One could tell a man that it was perfectly safe to walk a plank across an abyss, yet even if the structural calculations were impeccable, he might still be unable to do it. Now Jimmy understood why the commander had been so evasive about the details of the rescue. He had been given no time to brood or to think of objections.
"I don't want to hurry you," said Norton's persuasive voice from half a kilometer below, "but the sooner the better."
Jimmy looked at his precious souvenir, the only flower in Rama. He wrapped it very carefully in his grimy handkerchief, knotted the fabric, and tossed it over the edge of the cliff. It fluttered down with reassuring slowness, but it also took a very long time getting smaller and smaller and smaller until he could no longer see it. But then Resolution surged forward, and he knew that it had been spotted.
"Beautiful!" exclaimed the commander enthusiastically. "I'm sure they'll name it after you." "Okay, we're waiting."
Jimmy stripped off his shirt, the only upper garment anyone ever wore in this now tropical climate, and stretched it thoughtfully. Several times on his trek he had almost discarded it. Now it might help to save his life. For the last time he looked back at the hollow world he alone had explored, and the distant, ominous pinnacles of the Big and Little Horns. Then, grasping the shirt firmly with his right hand, he took a running jump as far out over the cliff as he could. Now there was no particular hurry. He had a full 20 seconds in which to enjoy the experience, but he did not waste any time, as the wind strengthened around him and Resolution slowly expanded in his field of view. Holding his shirt with both hands, he stretched his arms above his head, so that the rushing air filled the garment and blew it into a hollow tube. As a parachute, it was hardly a success. The few kilometers an hour it subtracted from his speed was useful, but not vital. It was doing a much more important job, keeping his body vertical so that he would arrow straight into the sea. He still had the impression that he was not moving at all, but that the water below was rushing up towards him. Once he had committed himself, he had no sense of fear. Indeed, he felt a certain indignation against the skipper for keeping him in the dark. Did he really think that he would be scared to jump if he had to brood over it too long? At the very last moment, he let go of his shirt, took a deep breath, and grabbed his mouth and nose with his hands. As he had been instructed, he stiffened his body into a rigid bar and locked his feet together. He would enter the water as cleanly as a falling spear.